I'm very excited to have Dorothy and Preston here again. Dorothy has been a big part of the Writers Center since its beginning, as far as I can tell, since I've been here at least. And Preston has been a friend of the Writers Center for years, too.
Well, I am, and what amazed, when I came last time, what was really amazing was that I stayed here and stayed up most of the night, and I wrote a poem, and I'm just going to read you a little part of it, but it's like a 9-page poem, and it's about Vincent's House and Charles Olson and me trying to write with them, and it's kind of interesting, so I just preview if I ever come again. So
this reading is going to be interesting. It's going to be more of a conversation between the two poets than one poet reading.
Yeah,
but I'm going to tell you a little bit about them. Dorothy Shebo Nelson's poems have appeared in Polis, Human Architecture, Consequence, Atelier, Cathay Review, North Shore North, Rhythm Music Magazine, Sojourner, and various community newspapers. Her review of Vietnam veteran Bruce Weigel's collection, The Abundance of Nothing, was published in Consequence magazine. Formerly a senior lecturer in English at UMass Boston, she has published The Dream of the Sea, early poems, and a chapbook, Something Near. She is on the advisory board of the Gloucester Writers Center and facilitates a veterans writing workshop here in Gloucester, which I see some members here, and it's great to see you guys here.
Wow.
That's Dorothy. Preston Hood is a former Navy SEAL who served in Vietnam and is the author of two books of poetry, A Chill I Understand, which was the 2007 Maine Literary Award finalist in poetry, and The Alleluia of Listening, winner of the 2012 Maine Literary Award in Poetry. I'm going to leave the rest of the words to Dorothy because she has a few things she wants to say about Preston.
Just about Preston. And,
I'm going to leave the night to the two of you now.
Thank you. First,
thank you, Amanda.
Preston. I was thinking about talking about Preston for just a minute, and I looked through two of the books that he's written, The Hallelujah of Listening and A Chill I Understand. And I looked at some of my notes. We are stopped by epiphanies due to fresh transcendent metaphor. And then an example of that from Ultramarine. Often the worm turns in my shadow. Often I am hushed by ink on a white page. Often I am tied to the dark by ghosts. The intensity in his poems doesn't diminish, nor does it give up. He is a teacher, friend, builder, carpenter, woodman. Katahdin is not high enough for him. There is amazement and wonder of the purest kind. The approach to poetry is pious, courageous, and he gives himself over. His poems have been called redemption, deliverance, compassionate for the self and all of humankind. And it's a real honor to be reading with you tonight and working with you today as we have. Thank you.
Well, I also thank you for being able to work with you and combine our works together, and hopefully we'll give you a different reading to make it, hopefully exciting.
Let's begin.
Yeah.
Well, we should explain, first of all, we're going to have, I think this could be three different parts to this program. And then they'll go by really quickly. But in the first part, we're each reading our own poems.
Right.
And the second part, the first part, we're each reading our own one poem apiece. The second part, I know one poem that I'm reading, one he wrote, and he's reading one I wrote. And then two.
We're doing that twice.
Okay, you'll have to remind me about that. And then the third part, we're each reading maybe, if this time, five or six more recent poems that we've been working on. And then we hope to have an open mic. I've talked a couple of people, just come up with one poem. It'd be great to hear from people in the audience who've brought something. And refreshments. We'll see if we have time. Hopefully we will. We'll be watching the clock.
Okay, well, We're all excited to do this. In search of repose, in sleep, in dream, iron pike fulcrum, free fall down rabbit hole of sleeplessness, tension, anxiety, words talk to thought, the ghosts of war flashback. An ice pick through her head, a knife slits his throat, a drowning, blood gush out, a suicide, memories like fallen rock crash through my crash. A hyena's cry heard through a scream. These truths I speak to her acquaintance see. On a hill of my youth, I play king of the mountain, push down the hill with agony's broken bone yell. The eye of the sun is the dark side of the moon. Are stars only ours when we transcend? My spirit does rise from war's raw shout of brains blown out. In morning, the sky squirrel cinnamon tries to seek its shape. The moon clouds, the heart clogs with blood. I live with someone's pounding fist. There are more days now when I see a luminous shaft of light. Become a tree toad. Oryx smiling in sun dog's reflective ice. I think the moon silver, the sky clears, my heart pumps with blood. I toast to life, I toast to life. Recline, observe, appreciate. Herringbone clouds disperse in nature. Today, what shall we share between us? Again, the bombing, the wounded and the dying. Aftermath of war. My echo of the heart, the earth's turning, does not stop a moon's darkness.
Dearth. They get water from the rain now, through the roofs of their new houses. The sun runs everything day and night, all things working for them, it seems. Far from the new dwellings, old houses are slowly folding in, barely holding. Decay and growth, a stacked deck. Many people left behind with nowhere to go, except to the edge, like that time in Rio, removed far from TV and cameras. Hot coal passed around. A shaking hand grips the divining rod, searching for water underground that's not contaminated. A purification plant is coming, but not quick enough, not soon. Rise up, raise your cup. We will drink water together from now on for all time.
Dorothy and I decided we both have Irish in our background, so I'm reading an Irish poem and she's going to follow with a poem about gathering a family. Patina. In the wind, on the clothesline, the sock's shadow cannot imitate the starling's wingtip lift while a passing cloud shades us with silence. The cold sweep of the Atlantic up the valley parcels out its time across the bogs of turf, warmth still far off. Heat lightning snaps like a dog before moments of loveliness draw near. A greatcoat sky, bellowing air, that invisible touch of kiss, the sex we died for, the light we hope would transform us, the sock in the wind pointing to a cloud, the eagle passing motionless at the edge of a cliff, near a wide dirt road on a hillside in Dugort, the rough patina of dust and age. The sheep and the people stopped in the finest light, remain by the dwellings, stilled.
Gathering at Glen Columkillith, the McGinley Gathering, October 2013. You see, we were overwhelmed, humbled, smaller in significance. We were found in the crowd among you, speechless. no longer isolated. No split between happiness and loss. No separation between cousin, sister-in-law, friend. We were drawn like the tide, as if the moon was full behind the highest hill. And the rain was the same all over, watering fields from the earth's water. We were blinded by the light and the dark, finding our way at night with the stars and lamps behind the window shades of warm small houses hugging the street. The next day, a double rainbow spanned Glen Columkill from the sea to the other side, sovereign over the undiminished valley, higher than anything of human hands, overwhelmed by free roaming rams and goats and the books written and those to come, by the old music, rousing steps and sounds to wake the dead, laughing at our ruses and stiff necks, sins we beg forgiveness for, the long list for confession. We wanted to stay as if this was home, by the ancient tongue, alive again in the throat, as if all the tyrants were long gone, long reach of gathering arms and hold.
A poem of light for Dale. Wind across your face, somewhere out there on the inner side of your world. Bright light can only make you stronger and surely closer with John. Look deep into yourself, your identical absolute, a cosmos shimmering. The ancients tell us we are enamored with something. Call it love's quality of giving when you step out from your body and into your hope, your heart. Your hosannas are blooming, a glowing, a fireweed of passion. Fondness of care is a joy that we inherit, a resolve of how the pyramids were made. With a plumb line, thus how will and love are built. Yes, Dale, look deep into yourself, a sense of life moving within, around and about, you explore the simple things of wanting to dance all night to a new moon in an old body. Let your thoughts flutter in God's given light. Fear not thunder or the rain. Turn from the tide that pulls you under to the flow of in and out. Sense how the chi of your body wants renewal, not the anchor of night. Remember, the mirror of light is not the Hubble, but your heart, a feminine moon of dawn. Often the world is a sea of unresolved questions for you to resolve. Go to your brown cupboard kitchen, find tamaric and spices that heal. Go to the ancient manual of women's seascape. Draw out the cruel cells from the lingering light. Revisit your life at the power of 10 with the astonishment of rejoicing. Anoint with lighting of candles and feel your whole body thrum. See the clouds of orange amadas. Follow their tethered fingers away from the darkening waters. Friends and loved ones wish you to be a pulsing star, not a black hole falling in on itself. Your salvation? Being here with all of us for another day. Life is short, but giving to others is the calligraphy of your heart. Dale, still your light shines within us, for we see you as the monarch, born of persistence and luminosity, on another earthly journey, fluttering back and forth between the seasons, with no end in sight.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Dale died right after I got this to her, but she got to see it. So she was a good friend of mine. She was a Reiki master. She was the only white minister in an indigenous tribe of Indians. And so it was just so amazing that she was alive to give. She also did Reiki for others, and she was such a wonderful giving person.
Well, one I'm going to read is very short, and it's for Vincent Farini. But I do feel sometimes when I'm reading Preston's work and hearing him that I can hear some of Vincent's spirit and in a number of poems. I think he would have loved that poem too. You know? This is in the Pentlers of all places in Montana, in the Rocky Mountains. In the Pentlers for Vincent Farini. In the Pentler Range, aspen and grass grew again not long after the wildfires, and 10 years since the smelter coughed its last choking breath. One night, near the Nez Perce hot springs, under the jagged skies, I dreamed I saw your shadow, stalking ghost-like in the woods, then a solid form swinging its large grizzly paws, insisting that I go further, venture outward to the vast amphitheater. Come over here with us, you said, and stand on the platform under the sky.
Wow. Very nice. Well, you know, as we move on in life, we like to have something behind us, and I call it spirit.
What number?
If you measure time from the sea to the shore and back again, walk the hitherland of lost crows to an island of inland silence. If you calculate the drift of plankton through the Mariana Trench of eons into the mouths of whales, their will breach toward the salmon-honed sky, the crags of old mountains, the moon-reflected ice of the heart, you might temper probing through the worn quill of thought with a breeze over the sand beach to the offshore rocks.
Hmm. One more Montana poem. Rainbow Mountain. Anna said the double rainbow after the rain was Rosalind and Peggy looking down. The arch filled the sky, spanning the far rims of the hills on each side of the road. We crossed Rainbow Mountain the day before, lucid swift streams, tamaracks, snow patches, Indian paintbrush, Russian thistle, the rocky trail spiraled higher and higher. Tacker passed his camera over Goat's Flats, Stormlight Pass, nearby crests and peaks, lakes far below. We began the descent. Stay, he said. The old gods are still here.
Above the mountain she's climbing, we see sun dogs. Sun dogs are crystals of ice, strings to the imagination, children pulling kites. Sun dogs are crimson clouds, the wax wings of Icarus, changeable as a fireweed sky. Tears of a poet who has stolen the sun. Sun dogs are rainbows. On a winter's day, heading west, prisms of sun through a cloud.
I'm all set now. Are we going to
the next section, right?
Yeah.
You go first. Ha ha.
This is for Cullen, Preston's grandson. Cullen, 4 days old, waking. I hug my first grandson, rock him back and forth above the swaying white daffodils, hear his breath measured and calm, and discover those sea-deep eyes that blink from the water music of sleep. His tiny fingers open, close, embrace my thumb, the moment sharing, our lives intertwine, branch toward light. While he gazes up at me and into this world, his eyelids flutter. I wonder what he sees, how he thinks, what does he want to hear from me? 4 days, just four, too young to focus or concentrate, yet somewhere in sleep where he should be. How irresistible in my arms, his head leaning against my chest, the bright noon warming around him. Peace composes his face. His serene expression breathes love to me in code. I hold him long enough against my cheek to feel his pulse and yawning grin awaken and arouse in me a new beginning where everything again is possible. When I listen closely, I can almost hear him speak.
Wow. This is Dorothy's poem, Newborn, for Nathan Leo Brickman. It's a slow motion stroll, almost out of body, to the towers, elevated to the 15th floor, a short walk down the hall, where I stop and knock. The door opens to his powder blue eyes, his fists and kicks, and suddenly I'm joined like sightings to an evening star. Wheeling him through the field, he reaches from the carriage for blowing leaves, the best thing about city parks. I tell him, is the sky? Then climb the steps to your home with your child. One day after his feeding, he cried for a long time. I sang and danced, but nothing solved until you returned and took him into your arms. I watched as you walked into his room and stood before the mirror, seeing deep into the glass a new young father gazing at your newborn son and yourself. The next one is just an update.
Preston recently moved to Coleraine, Mass, and we have some friends in Coleraine. This is a love poem. Coleraine, when we make love, we could be anywhere. The art of secrecy. The poet said, keep something for yourself. Outside, the mist rises and spreads in the dale of the deep woods. The pale steam from the earth ascends between the hills to meet heaven. Imagine being lost in that, the heat of the earth as the fog lifts, climbing the ravine.
Another love poem, Somewhere from Earth. In the gray carton darkness, monarchs' hearts lift, their thoughts of death while flying from cocoons, bodies flutter open. In a meadow of celestial light, where we loved suspended, solstice moontime, sunlight ebbing into the dusk, our breath one long release of ahs and ohs, take on the sky, clouds, geese honk, toward the bellied silhouette of our spooning, a tingling, our blood, a white sail of colorless light.
I think I wrote this poem in the 1990s, but it's going to sound more present than I anticipated at that point. It's called Still Warm. The afternoon is still warm, not blinding. The crowd has thinned. It's been a day to relive the pain of centuries. Evil has a course to run over and over until we see each one that categories kill. It takes this long to stop mocking the turtle. Some things were not heard. Imagination is revelation. At last you know how long it lives and how it dies. Join the voices on the underside. Let the sun find you unexpectedly on your way around. Now and then appear as a large mound in the sea.
Our singing for John F. Dean. John F. Dean is an Irish poet who got me to go to Ochil Island to do a 2-week stay to finish my first book of poetry, and I happened to make a good friendship with him. After the rainbow, the luminous slant of light through clouds, the flat calm of pond stillness, where a frog trills a single note, and the oriole a sound older than anyone. Stars glint and you exalt. I envision you mapping the sky with a silver-etched pencil against the crease of darkness. We assume the spirit lives to renewal, yet we enter the abyss and find no answers. The most damaged of us struggle with belief. We want our loved ones back and learn the best part of our singing are the shadows we leave as we travel this earth and beyond to be discernible. Climb from our struggle into the marvelous.
Should I read Truth next?
Yeah. Go for it.
This is Truth, inspired by Mahmoud Darwish. You are my half-sister. We have the same father. We have been separated too long. I can stay in the city no more. Tall buildings hide your eyes, the sand in your hair, your wrinkled face. Machines and fighter planes smother your cries and the cries of little birds. Take me to your children. Was it a hard birth? Show me the rose bush near your well, the fruit of your trees, almonds, lemons. Take me to the graves. These walls confine us. They keep us estranged. Did you see the half moon low in the sky? I ran to the highway to find the moon. Do you have enough water? Can I reach you with this page? Will this offering call forth water from the dry spring? Call forth absent voices whose lips will kiss stones under stones? Here the rain keeps coming, pushing against the cracks and the frame of my wooden house. There is nothing we can do about this rain.
A good omen. Often your words make me laugh. Although there's no photo of you in the apartment, I encourage you to send one so that my tongue may know the place of your lips. I want to know the rivers and mountains you crossed and the wave of your following another wave of me touching you. What float in are the longings I have for you, the yearnings you offer me, to feel, to hold, to lend an ear, to listen. The touch of love, the meteor across the southern sky, a good omen. Are we on the last section now?
That's it.
Okay, you go first.
Okay. So I'm going to read a few poems. Some of them are recent, or some of them are part of a project I'm working on. I have one poem that I'd like to start with that's part of a book I'd like to work on about my experience working with coal miners in West Virginia. And I remember when we were working together this afternoon, Preston asked me, was there someone who died that you wrote about? Because he has some really powerful poems about that. And after you left today, I found a poem.
Good. So,
tell me how you died, for Chuck Cooper, born in 1952, died in 2008. I know how your father died, because Vonda told me. His heart gave out while square dancing at the same beer garden we went to one night. You showed me the pole your father grabbed onto before he fell to the floor. Vonda said she filed for black lung, trying to prove the connection between lung disease and the heart, but her benefits as a miner's wife were denied. Your mom continued, trying her best, selling Avon. She learned the black lung law quickly. I heard she was representing others with claims after I left. Tonight I am lighting a candle, a warm scent to bring back your spirit, praying, writing, conjuring. Days before I left, this is West Virginia, you picked me up in your truck and drove through the hills and forests. We finally came to the mountain and took off on a clear dirt road up the side, higher and higher. When we arrived near the top, you stared at me. You were not smiling. your eyes wide and stern, but bright. You pulled over and told me where to look. It was behind where you were sitting. We walked along newly bared ground, bereft of peaks and layers of stone and earth, above the tree line, the land defiled. It was Sunday. Front loaders and back hoes were still. It's terrible to look at, I said. You talked about the future of mining, calling it strip mining. We returned to the truck, staring again at my face while I took a picture and have it still. Your eyes, shining visage, blonde curly hair under your hat.
And I also had one of many people die, but this is for a childhood friend who in Swansea, Mass., where I was brought up for my first 17 years, we used to play toy warfare in the trenches behind his house. And this is about that moment in our youth for William K. Gardella, wall panel 22E, line 61. Tripwire, a booby trap I land inches from. And your mind Amtrak death with only 4 days in country? Were they for nothing? I have a difficult time believing this, so I'm carving a poem of sadness with your name chiseled in the black granite wall of my mind, with the others, all the deaths taking time, each death spoken through me, crying out to be heard. I remember when you were 9, you, your brother Chucky, and I played war side by side in the trenches behind your house. Between knowing and not knowing, we shot each other with toy guns and played dead, conditioning our minds forever. The last time we talked, you were home on leave before you trudged through the Nam jungle, proud as a flag to be a Marine, gung-ho in your dress blue uniform. Continuing the fight, you said. 3 years to the day you left country, I left for Vietnam carrying the sadness of your death. Unaware, I might die too. In a body bag, you came back. I, a caged wolf, never to be the same from the killing I saw. Each night, I pick up the sorrow of my grief to attack the ghosts that run like NVA through my dreams. After all these years, I suppose it does no good to dig out the toy guns in the closet. But for my survival, I must attempt it.
Should I read another one?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, read your 7 poems or whatever.
No, I don't know. All right. How are you doing?
Well, we can just continue one me and one you.
This is a new poem. All right. It's only newer than some of the others. One more time. At that moment, the wind died down. The cove littered with winter and fall. Dark sea grasses scattered in small mounds, the sounds of the surf tending the wounds of earth's shelf and the sore soul of the cove. The promontory is almost covered now. Soon it will be invisible to the ship's captain, who will misread this cove for the harbor, so dense is the fog. Soon there is only the road, the wind and rain, and a small azure patch of sky. And a small azure patch of sky breaking through the haze. One more time before night descends, a shawl and threads in pieces. Nothing will ever be the same. Just these stars mirrored in the sea. A young monk lends her hand to an elder to lift him from a large rock and return to prayer.
The next poem, I would give you a little background. It's entitled The Hallelujah of Listening. Dúnavir is on Achill Island. It's in the northwest corner of Ireland. And right across from it, you see Westport. And it's looking, Dúnavir, the town, overlooks into the Westport. And on top of Westport, there's a mountain called Crowpatrick, which is named after St. Patrick. And every July 31st, 30,000 people climb up that in one day to a church at the top. And when they get to the top, they have communion. They have like six or seven priests giving communion. And within that, there are many people who climb that to do penance on their sins, and they actually go barefooted. I know this for a fact because I climbed it the next morning at 6 o'clock, and the things they left on the trail were just amazing. The hallelujah of listening. From Dunover, we're lured by angels in the sun-dappled wind. They dance with shadows. Their radiant hair, a seascape of salt, sundog air. Some of us walk through Ochil's mist, anointed by the whispering surf, or charge into a valley of an image, rave about the lowered moon behind Sleevemore's cloud-covered top. Like first light finches, I dart into the thicket, feel the cool morning silence. I climb with pilgrims under a salmon coral sky. Voices chant invocations. The red-bellied fuchsias lift and sway on this steep path. Bloodstones of penance. Even sheep turn to listen. I wish I knew if Crowpatrick could be mindful of them and us, wrapped in our chorus of hallelujahs.
Nice. That's the name of the book that won the prize in Maine, Hallelujah of Listening.
Well, just a short note about that. It's funny. 4 years or 5 years before I even wrote this poem, and before I really, when I started putting poems together, I had thought of that as a title, and that's going to be my next book. So I had to think of, well, how, what kind of listening do we have to figure out for that? But anyway.
It's a hallelujah of listening. It's important. Yeah.
You ready? Go.
This is also a recent poem. Without knowing, the way we started, tentative like snakes, creeping, a stroll or snow dusting on bare walkways in the windshields of cars, a drop of rain at onset, the first gray hair or tooth in the infant you are holding. An event can be fast, like a fire from a spark with a strong wind, or ideas that come from somewhere that we choose to grasp, pitons that we use to climb the mountainside. Without knowing, without knowing. The bird that Noah saw from the ark after the rain stopped, and still no land in view, stations, safe houses, clues, remembered stories, such as how to get to Pie Town from Laguna, where water will be found along the way, long journeys to be rid of memories as slaves, or penance for obeying orders, the peripatetic spreads a blanket on the ground at night and waits for light. Who is walking? Who is looking? How to cease seeing only ourselves, as if the world mirrors our perceptions. Further by the wharf, a runner stops, bends over for breath, and rests. We could resume, bereft, leaving behind what's left, clearing the scrapings with sticks as we move.
I believe strongly that a poet should be giving, caring person. He also should be a shaman. He should be a seer of light and translate poems to other people so they can get enjoyment out of it. But I also believe there are times when a poet has to be political. This poem is political, and I want you to hear it clearly because it has to do with what's happening now, and it's been happening to do since Iraq and Afghanistan war started, and that's suicide. I had a son who was in the service who committed suicide. I was in a program, I am in a program at Ward 8 for PTS, post-traumatic stress. And with that, being in that program, it's just amazing. We, even now, in the last year, we've had, I've been in with two of these guys in the last 3 years. And then just this last year and a half, three of them committed suicide. An Iraq soldier dies every day and a half on average in Iraq or Afghanistan. An American soldier, excuse me. Veterans kill themselves at a rate of one every 80 minutes. More than 6,650 veteran suicides are logged every year, more than the total number of soldiers killed in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. Since those wars began, New York Times Sunday Review, April 14, 2012. And I went online a week ago, and I found out that the number is staying between 20 and 22, and it's really sad, because nobody ever wants to talk about it. Nobody from the president right down doesn't want to mention it, and the VA can't get enough people, healthcare people, to meet these needs of these people who kill themselves. Scattershot. Heart's wound, scream and cry of anger, others' agony, yours, another's death. 22 per day, Glock to mouth, razor wrist atrocities, nose throat endings. 22 per day. Who listened to their darker sadness? Who built a temple for their loss? Opaque glass of insomnia, flashing, sit, go, sign of PTSD. Do this, do that signs. Desert sand of nightmare, body armor of rage. 22 per day. Dilated pupil, despair, don't mean nothing. 22 per day, whom they loved was not enough in the morning. 22 per day, not enough in the evenings between them. I've come to think death not enough, nor roses enough hurled to a warring world. 22 per day, 22 per day, 22 per day.
Back to the mountains.
Oh, good.
This is a poem I wrote about Taos Mountain in northern New Mexico. Taos Mountain, where water came from, the top. Okay, I'm going to start again. Where water came from the top, then filtered slowly, snow washed down the slopes through deep crevices with minerals, crystal streams rushed through Precambrian rocks, smoothing the ancient stones, came to land and returned to the Pueblo like Blue Lake when at last given back by Washington, 48,000 acres feeding the Rio Pueblo for corn, squash, gourds, beans, and hot springs, for pots, adobe bricks and walls, mud oven, baked bread, and healing is Taos Mountain, God.
Speaking of Kropatrick, I'm going to pass this around after the poem. But this fellow is a friend of mine, and he's married to one of the famous writers and poets of Ireland, Geraldine Mills, and they live in Galway. And this is right below on a tributary when I was there in 2005, and he says on Facebook and sent it to me, he said, Preston, does this remind you of something? And I go, oh my word, and certainly it did. And immediately I saw it, and I wrote this word for word, and it's one of those poems that write themselves. How that happens, I'll never know, but it does happen. And it does happen more than I think it would, and it's great. But there are others, like my grandson poem, you have to write 30 copies of, just so you won't think it's sentimental. Or you need to find the right words, you know what I mean? So this is called Mirrored Soul. Above the camera click calm, a gull glide mid still. A blue skiff arcs in white below. After seeing this, our glistened hopes dance like egrets along the inlet of light. Uh-oh. The most important line is left out.
It's on the back.
Oh, okay, there it is. And yet, we still wonder what we do not know.
Nice. Do you want to bring it to a close soon?
What do you got?
I was going to read something from Vincent Farini's book. Good. Okay. That I had him on my mind of being here. Well, first of all, before that, I just wanted to mention this book. It's called Writing Away the Demons.
Oh, yeah.
And Stories of Creative Coping Through Transformative Writing. And this is an anthology of essays. Is it all
basically it's essays, yeah.
All by veterans?
No, all by different people. One person was a nun, and
So you.
I was the only veteran.
He has an essay in here where he writes about his post-traumatic stress and is able to integrate his poems with the essay, and to show, you know, how the healing took. You know, how some of his healing took place. And so I think most of the writers have done that in this book. It's an interesting book.
Yeah, absolutely right. But the only thing I'll add is that a lot of times I had a whole, years and years, I had a lot of snakes in my poems. And yet if you look at snakes in one way, they're evil, but in another way, they're transformative. And so little did I know that I was actually going through this. But that poem, the first poem, took me 30 years. I started it in Vietnam and put it away. I couldn't go back to it for years because I didn't want to, I wasn't ready, whatever it was. And then slowly but surely I could write about it again. This one's called Chamber Music by Vincent Farini. And you know what's interesting about this? I happened to be looking through my books before I came down here. And it's all the Cafe Review, and I'm looking at it, and I go, oh, my word, guess who is right next to me reading a poem right after me? Two poems, I had two poems before him, and he had two poems after me, Vincent Farini. Chamber Music. The kitchen's around a pillar of notes, a red by the moonlight. From its angles, nothing is subtracted. Other summations coming. The part, the tenets, and deliberations visit themselves, checking on the slants of the directions. As the moon pockets them away for transitions to the mute organist of the absent audience. Mm. Very powerful, huh?
That's good. All right. This book I would love to see reprinted. The Magi Image. Did I say that right?
Magi.
I've heard it both ways. I don't know. Magi Image. This is an amazing
Magi,
book.
Magi, yeah.
And I taught at the Boston Conservatory for a while in the liberal arts department, writing and literature, and I wanted them to read this book. So I asked Vincent if he had extra copies. This was in the 90s. He said, $4 a book. And I collected the $4, came to this place, and took away 60 books. Mm-hmm. And as you can tell, I tried to teach it with lots of my post-its.
And you tried. You certainly look like you did an awesome job.
I'm not going to read this, but they had such a wonderful response to the book. And I sent this to Vincent with all the things they said about the book. And like they said they liked your story in your finals. You who said, stop the examinations. College students love that. And they notice when you bring some master down to size and when you capitalize. They say your mother, what did they say about their mother? Your mother was your muse. It's a beautiful thing. And they really love the book. But overall, the favorite poem of everybody was called The First Intimation by Vincent. So I'm going to read that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The First Intimation, Vincent Farini. Where is the heart? Forgotten in a place before you were born, and it is the closest to you. The beat of your primal bonding asking you to get in touch with and stay there. It is the only voice that can save you. If you obey its rhythms, it will heal you. Forget everything that ever happened to you. Dive into the heart's holy water and let its love for you breathe. Give up everything that is not in tune with the art of your heart, which is so deep inside you. Forget who you are and where you are, and drink from your heart's well water. It is where miracles come from and the cadence of perfect being. That's it. Wow. So, you got one more? I'm not going to read anymore.
Well, I'm going to go. The writing through is the last one. And then the a little, what I'll do is I'll send it to Amanda when it's done, the poem. She can share it with all the people. The Vincent Farini. Yeah, it's okay. But anyway.
Do we have an open mic coming? We have a few minutes.
Okay.
Go for it.
Crunching leaves are not grass in drunken fog that envelops them, us, all, me. Dusk is not light to a child lost. Plum clouds, the pendulum heart, parts, body parts, parts of bodies, legs, arms, ears, war vets losing touch. When I'm losing touch, sunless, songless, I eat leaves, yellow, gold, brown, crunched. I chew them like a spider eating flies. I become a blade of grass. I eat green when the sun dogs are skyless. Sometimes I eat leaves in the hue-dewed columbine. Camouflaged by the nipper-palm of darkness is another dimension. In my tar-black unwillingness to relive my kills, I put them in a safe and bury it. I eat leaves. There is no blood in my stomach until the gurgling trapped air leaves. Every thought of eating twigs, silver, gold, beach green, this toss of syllables, a worthy passing. Words Towards Morning, a poem written in Vincent Farini's Poet House 54, and this is only the first page. Thoughts, dart, nibble, howl, sing into tears. They harvest an emotional curvature of body, like hair covers, hats, caps, the anatomy weaving its form, a fluted tongue, its brush, a red awareness of the waking mind, slightly off key. While cars rumble by 126 East Main, a fisherman already dropped his nets into the abyss. He lifts the winch, I lift my pen, into the loon laughter air where sun has baked the beach of seaweed. Moisture we both share. Him fog hauling in his catch, me leaping Dante-esque through purgatory, sigh tear flame in Vincent's flat. Painstakingly loss enters and exits without request. Sometimes I need sorrow, guilt, hunger, the secret part of us that is beautiful and grotesque. The brain's weather, not of earth, made possible by our inability to gather space. Yes, space. Inside us, the framed light behind, I feel I'm a bird migrating between my summer heart and my winter soul, and vice versa. The restless urge as the sun angles into fall when I fly south and cheers when I fly north. I know this to be true because I get the day-length jitters, but that's another story. I have to remember I'm human. I have my ups and downs, flying from mountain to mountain, pond to pond, to elevate my mood. Thank God I'm not a sooty shearwater traversing the Pacific Ocean 40,000 miles in figure eights. I've never put a rabbit in one of my poems, but here goes, whether it might jump, multiply, or sing, chew with the conundrums off key, those sacrilegious songs in front of a funny, long-length body mirror. But one thing is for sure, I like seashells, so does Vincent. Soon lobster comes in again on the Memorial morning tide. And those rolls are so delicious, I might sing in the shower. This time here in Gloucester, a slight chill is in the air. And I'm hungry for poems. Anyone for words with shrimp scampi? My exuberance, a perfect scallop. With the wane of evening, I write loves mingling with a soul, birds singing with the writer inside, a field of electricity. Like Charles Olson's, sound travels, listening's breath like a revolution. Snails with inconspicuous tails, myths are tales, don't you know? Moon memory, snug torso, stay tuned.
Okay. That's it. How should we arrange people for the open mic? Should they, maybe I'll give up my seat or?
I can give mine up.
Oh, we can both give up. So, I know there's some people that came with poems.
Come on, Jim. Come on, get up there. I know you got a poem.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like a moth.
I'd be proud if you went up there. Come on.
Excuse me.
What did you say? You feel like a
moth among butterflies.
It's all right. We're all nervous when we get up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the nerves.
I know.
Dorothy, just leave it the way it is. Who are you?
Let me find them. I got a couple there. We were at the Healing Wall in West Springfield.
Say your name.
Name's James Peter Grigg from Danvers. Grew up in Gloucester. While we were up in West Springfield, I overheard some people talking. And came to my mind that there were guys in Nam that you never knew their name. You just knew them by nicknames. So I wrote this right after leaving there. It's among the names. I met him there at the wall. The wall that heals, they claim. He looked confused, and I asked what's wrong. Could I help? I wouldn't mind. He looked at me and slowly muttered, I can't find my friend. He died in Nam. I never knew his name. We called him Chief. A quiet guy, an Indian. From New Mexico, I think. In the paddies of Vietnam, he saved my ass. The price he paid was his. He beckons me. I know it's here. It's on the wall. I feel it in my heart. It cries out to me. But I fear I'll never find it. Perhaps in death, we'll meet again. I thank you for your time. We just lost a good friend at the writing club, the writing center, the workshop, I should say, to be correct. Mel Olson. He was a Korean vet. Him and his twin brother served in Korea in the artillery unit. And it was like, you know, I got the word from Dorothy. He was in the hospital, and it seemed like the next day he was gone. Mel's words, these words he chose to wake the mind, a barrier to climb, decipher. Another sunset mist as he searched in depth, the movement of the sky. But days went by unknowing what path that led to his demise. He wrote so carefully, precise, of war and brotherhood, of icy winds and misery. Such words he penned in a hurried pace. Yet darkness felt so unexpected. Too soon the stars appeared.
Oh, that's
wow.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
I got too many to read.
Any more? Come on. There's poets here. Gabe, what about you?
I'm coming.
Oh, good.
I'm not David. thank you, Jim.
Should she sit in this?
Either one's fine.
Okay.
Yep, just don't touch the mic. I'm in the workshop with Jim. I really appreciate that writing on Mel, and I hope you'll make copies for all of us. my main focus is my aunt, who was a ski jumper in the 30s and 40s, and this poem called The Dreammaker refers to my grandfather, who built the first ski jump in Massachusetts. And if you're interested afterwards, there's my aunt collected all these newspaper articles, and she has a picture of her dad, my grandfather, sitting by the ski jump. I stare at the photo of my grandfather building the first ski jump in the state. Flashes of my memory of him, much older and not as healthy, switch back and forth. I view his eyes strained from working by himself, having purpose and resolve. The 1934 article speaks of the structure's importance to Greenfield, being the best in the region, to ski jumping, costing under $14,000, I think, and sore muscles for Bill Graves. From the skier's standpoint, that the hill be ready for use as soon as we have snow, his words. Not difficult, as it appears that it's summer with my grandfather shirtless. 30 to 45 men will have employment for 6 months. It's the 30s. This fact is important. A later article refers to him as the planning engineer, a willing laborer with ingenuity. This was the second job for my grandfather, as he also worked on the railroad in town. He was one of the lucky ones. Good thing with a family of seven, four girls, one boy. Oral history told to his descendants includes discarded wood taken from the tracks. Shifting moments across decades, hearing my mother's words, his oldest daughter saying, he was so much better in those days, with us, with everyone. His apology just prior to leaving forever. The jump is not where my aunt would make most of her history, even though the town thought it would become the premier jump in New England. Yet it was a place from which her dreams and a few of my mother's would become more real, more possible. All dreams have to start somewhere. The photo is only of William H. Graves on the runway with a tool in his hand, bending toward the next part. The place is called Rocky Mountain. The area still exists, but without a jump. It can be viewed from Poet's Seat Tower then and now. I think of all of them, even of Ruthie, whom I never would meet. The rest had families. Time shifting, then standing still. The Dreammaker is young and hearty and more whole. The land is now without that ski jump, and I am now without them, yet still dreaming.
Wow.
this one has a small picture of my aunt taking off. You can't see it, but it's behind her. And there were numerous photographs of her as well. And I wrote this poem called The Odd Bird. I just need to point out that because she was a ski jumper in the 30s and 40s, she held a record for many decades, because women were not allowed to ski jump officially until the 2014 Olympics.
Wow.
There was also a award in her name called the Dorothy Graves Award, and several of the women that skied in that jump received that award in person from her before they were finally allowed to jump. This is called The Odd Bird. I look for her spirit in a woman who wears a patterned sweater with a winter design in the corner at a small wooden table. Coffee, plain and black, staring back, and she staring in. Thinking of home, her first coffee, a shock. Her sister's death, a complete shock. And her mother leaving, not walking out, just not present in the present. I look for her challenges when I see children who strive to learn how to read, to learn their multiplication tables, understand algebra, certain science charts, and well, to survive the playground. Befriending the innocent, the boy with thick glasses and buck teeth, her athletic abilities beyond his, yet showing him how to bat, kick the ball harder, shoo away bullies and hurtful comments. I look for her flying, not in airplanes nor with hang gliders, oh, never those things, but for her form at the top of the mountain, poised for to leave, at the right moment, at her moment, to fly down a wooden slide, with the winter wind attempting to stall her form, prevent her lunge, yet lunge she would, and for all time, and being the best possible jumper anywhere in the world, in her town and country. I miss her spirit. I miss her.
Wow.
Thank you.
And just one more, and the reason I'm reading this here is because when I was here for Women's Day this past March, I was observing someone looking out the door, so the environment may be familiar to people. And it was in this room the event occurred. It's called Wondering on Women's Day. I noticed her gazing through the window panes of the front door. The scene beyond was quite ordinary, a small local gas station with one or two patrons at a pump, a closed restaurant no one gathered at anymore, cars parked in front. Behind her was a gathering of women whose voices would soon be heard, all different from unique backgrounds, yet one in a unifying sisterhood with a common core. What was she thinking about, gazing at, or dreaming of? Had I been her significant other, I would have whispered, "A penny for your thoughts." In her mind's eye, were we marching on to victory in a grand parade or holding another vigil at another time in history? Was she contemplating an all-encompassing moment when the veil of limitations would lift forever? Or perhaps her focus was on a single seagull lifting its wings and heading toward the beach, just a short walk and a long journey. There, life appeared bright beyond the sun tint in an improved tomorrow. It was only a moment, a pose that I may never witness nor ever give such importance to. Why did I then? Because, at her core, she encourages others to soar. That's why I was wondering what she was wondering on Women's Day. Gracia plena, full of grace.
Thank you.
Did Mark, did you want to read? And then Virginia, you
want to read? Okay. So I did a year in Vietnam, and last year from September to this year, I wrote down my dreams every day.
Wow.
So I'm going to read one dream-related poem and then two dreams. You need to know that grunt in Vietnam refers to infantry soldier, and Di Di Mao is Vietnamese for get away, get out of here. And pardon my French. This is called Outside Looking In. Here in the tall green dark, I tell six-foot skinny Luke, platoon medic, grease gun slung at the hip, 45 caliber bullets tucked in a thin, long clip. Tell him the brim of his boonie hat reminds me of Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farms. What the hell was that? For Christ's sake, all grunts know war kills sleep. But what is big hair Mark Twain doing in my grunt dream? Somebody tell him Di Di Mao quick. Tell Tom and Becky, same, same. Tell them this is my war, my dream, and I am not fucking strange. Two dreams. The family of a famous activist visits my house for dinner. As we eat behind us at another table, a little girl with expressive eyes stares at me intensely. After the meal, the family lines up to say goodbye, and I look forward to their hugs. But the two sons offer only brief embraces. Finally, the father, a tall, distinguished man, his leathery face a warren of crags and valleys, towers over me, holds me gently to his chest. At parting, in a jocular way, he says he will contact me about his next protest action at a jail, waking with the liberation, I say, thank you for dropping by. I do that. I talk in my sleep when I'm waking. This is the second and last dream. At a busy restaurant counter, I buy food for my brother and myself. $7.50, says the waitress, an attractive, chatty, gaunt brunette who wears a paper tiara and her 1940s-style hair. She places two large glass soda bottles and another item in a white paper bag. But I've forgotten the Danish, which sits on the counter obscured by the napkin holder. And this, too, I tell her, picking up the savory. Her large brown eyes dart back and forth as she bags the Danish, adds up the total. $3.20, she says furtively, which seems overpriced. As if reading my thoughts, she says, I gave you another.
My name is Virginia McKinnon. I'm also part of Dorothy's group at the Veterans Center, and I wrote a lot about my husband's post-traumatic stress from World War II, which wasn't recognized until many, many years later. And this is just a little poem that I wrote about.
Just speak.
Okay. I live just up the street from here on Stanwood Terrace. It's a little dead-end street, and it's off of Hammond Street, which is off East Main Street. And this is just nature on the terrace, on my Stanwood Terrace. Let us observe the backyard mountain. My children were like mountain goats, climbing and jumping gleefully with no fear. Watch out, I would cry, challenge your invincible spirit. The impending danger of falling off the cliffs, 20 feet to my land below, into my neighbor's beautiful rock garden. Sometimes I would venture to climb to the peak, to my secret place. I was at peace to be so high. No one knew I was there, watching our beautiful harbor in all its splendor, the whole city in my view. Years have passed since children came to build their tree houses on top of the world, ladders, boards, and hours of pounding and sawing for a castle, a fortress, a man cave. Girls keep out, manly pride in completion, boyhood memories of adventure and fantasy. An ancient oak tree commands the summit, magnificent in size, now old and weary. Mighty branches are homes for squirrels and nests for birds of many species. Families of rabbits find refuge and shelter. Early morning, I awake to the cry of the crows. This oak was their home first, they'll have me know. Do you want this other one about the sunset? Are we all done?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
All right, this is about the sunset. Looking out at the evening sky, I am amazed at the beauty of an exquisite sunset. The sky is brilliant in colors. Such a gift of beauty exists for all this world. My cousin in Castella di Dusa, Terracini, Sicily, has been posting pictures on Facebook, sharing her sunsets from Sicily. Sunsets there are just as beautiful. I am reminded of my grandmother being born in her same little village, watching the same beautiful sunsets. I am reminding how different her life must have been. Her home was high up on a hill, probably like my home. Her family, my Nana relates to me, were very wealthy. They never wanted her to leave this paradise. My grandfather loved Nana and a new life in America even more. Nana came to a new land with my mother, her four-month-old baby. I believe her life was very difficult, not knowing the language and with no family support. I'm amazed at Nana's courage. She raised 11 very successful children. My grandfather, being a fisherman, was out to sea, earning a living to support their family. In later years, I remember my Nana in her 80s and 90s. Her vision was very diminished from glaucoma. On a sunny day, she would sit by her window with a crochet hook in hand, joyfully crocheting beautiful little afghans for the cribs of her many great-grandchildren. Life in America was good. Looking back at the sunset, I am reminded how our lives are so different. The splendor of a beautiful sunset is a universal gift for all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone, for coming and for reading your work. And you want to stay around, there's drinks and cheese and crackers, and talk to Preston.
Yeah, well, you. We'll talk to you. But I just want to say, Henry, thank you for keeping Vincent's memory alive, and thank you for doing all this, because it means so much to so many people.
It does,
we do appreciate it.
Thank you.